Blog Talk Radio.
Regal Poet Radio.
Welcome to the Regal Poet Radio Show, the conduit for the poet entrepreneur. I am your host once again, Imone M. Prosper, and it's always a great pleasure to bring you another episode live. Our goal is to always deliver to the artist entrepreneurs out there looking to take their art business to the next regal level, show you guys the best practices within the creative industries. So definitely today is no different. I hope you have your pen and pad ready. Our show is dedicated to those who consider themselves to be the misfits. I think I would include myself in that and just want to think outside the box at all times and just be rewarded for that. So I think I would put myself in that category. And this show is definitely for you. We are talking to a legendary tour producer with over 20 years of experience and over 24 tours produced under his belt. I had the pleasure of actually meeting Kevin Lyman during the Driven Music Conference in South Florida. And sitting with him was such an awesome experience. We were just listening to his philosophies on how the industry has changed and how he's been fluid with the changes. And I think that that was exactly what I needed to hear, and it was very inspiring and allowed me to even expand my own mind and really, really pour my creativity out. So I appreciate him for that. So let's go ahead and introduce him, because I know he has some great, wonderful things to tell us. But let me just let you know a little bit more about him. He's a writer, a filmmaker, a philanthropist, and the owner of Forfini. I hope I'm saying that correctly. He will correct me once he's on, but it's a live production house which is responsible for producing the Warped Tour and over 24 other tour programs. Lyman has been recognized with multiple awards for his philanthropic efforts and business achievements in the industry from powerhouses such as Billboard, just to name a few, and he's just on the cusp right now of releasing his upcoming book. I'm going to stop being tongue-tied, I promise. Misfit Summer Camp. It covers 20 years of the prolific tour, and he comes to us live from California. So let's go ahead and welcome, with great pleasure, Mr. Kevin Lyman. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Iman. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for having me on
good.
The show.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say, good afternoon to you, but you're actually, it's still morning for you, isn't
it?
Still
morning, busy morning. We were out judging a battle of the bands at the LA County Fair late last night and had a breakfast this morning. So we're just definitely on the run right now. We've got a super busy schedule. We're already booking the next summer tours. I've got a couple festivals coming up over the next couple weekends. So, I wish it was time to rest. Everyone thinks that I just go sit on the beach between tours, but it's the planning that goes in between that makes them successful.
Exactly. And you've been doing some amazing things. And I have had the pleasure of attending a Warped Tour event, and I always thought it was just so good. Everything was always so professional, and it got me to see the bands, and some people may not look at it the way I do, but it got me to see the professionalism of the bands, how on point they're always, very, very much focused. I've noticed that. And was that something that you guys do? You train them as well, or would we attest that to maybe their own management?
I wouldn't want to use the word train. That's what you kind of do with your puppies. But, we try to mentor them. We try to mentor them into, if you're coming out there, especially in this time frame, you're out there to work. You know, you want to maximize your time. You want to utilize it well. You don't want to sit on your bus necessarily and play video games, all day long. The tours I put out there are an opportunity to go meet fans, solidify the fans you have, and make new fans. And that's what we do trying to make the show eclectic. So, it's not just the same kids coming. There's a wide range of people coming to the show, and, they're sharing fans. You could be watching one band that you came to see, and there's something playing on another stage that catches your ear, and you wander over there, and now you have your new favorite band. And we've seen, a lot of bands develop through the years on our tours and go on to great things, and some, awesome people. And they become, a lot of them become good members of the community too. And that's what I'm proud of, when I can see them down the road doing things for Music Cares or things they maybe just got sparked out with us goes on in their lives.
Good. Awesome. Yeah, that's actually good to hear. Something artists, entrepreneurs out there really need to make sure you're focused, that there's a balance, you know, and there's that give back in there. Absolutely. And you mentioned, well, one thing that I've been talking to a lot of artists about is the importance of events. Would you agree that a lot of the money you make is really being out there with the fans, going from event to event?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, touring has become such a big part, you know, of anyone's career. As revenues have dropped from physical sales of CDs, either you're making specialty items, like, you know, right now, you know, vinyl is such a big part of anyone's lives, and I never thought in my life we'd be talking about vinyl delays, putting records out because you can't make enough vinyl right now. So, you know, it's that, and then going out there and meeting the fans, because even going way back, I'd say that handshake, once you start to monetize a handshake, that's a problem. So some of those VIP, but if you're out there actually signing for a fan, you're meeting them, and it used to be, you may not have that single on radio down the road, but you know what, that fan will stick with you because of that personal connection with you. So, you know, I think, you know, that's where you find me. I mean, I'm still out on the road for 2 months all summer, and I want to be accessible to the artists. I'm not necessarily their peers anymore. I'm a mentor or a disciplinarian is kind of what my role's turned into out there. But it's always been a hands-on business. And I think, I know that your show's about entrepreneurship. You know, being hands-on is very important. And as you grow, getting people around you that you trust to make decisions, you learn how. The hardest thing for an entrepreneur to do is not micromanage everything. And that took me many years to do, but now I have great people that I trust, and then they get that confidence built up out on the tours where they're running them professionally, so everyone around them starts acting more professional.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, it's true. You're only as good as your camp, so that's something that people have to really, really recognize. I was reading something, and Pharrell was talking about that, and he said that at first, it was just his friends because he saw potential in his friends. And then after a while, he had to weed people out.
Yep.
And really start hiring people and getting people professional. And he said he's so much more at ease now that because he has really good people, sometimes even he says better people than he, to take care of certain things so that he can make things happen. So I would
definitely agree. And that's the thing, you know, and that's what I tell these bands, you know, when we're at like things like Driven, there's also crew people looking to get into the business. I said, you know, the more you professional you act in whatever setting you're in, you'll grow with the band. And the people I've seen, some people grow with the band and become their managers and become very well. Or if you just turn into the guy that wants to hang out and party with the band and everything, you know, at one point you're usually going to be left on the curb somewhere. And
exactly.
And you lose your big shot at the business.
Right. So I want to cover the book. I'm excited for it. Give us a quick glimpse of what started the Warped Tour, because I'm pretty sure you'll cover that, but I kind of want people to have that backstory. What was the need you were attempting to fill with the Warped Tour?
Well, it was interesting. I I'm not to correct you, but, you know, when you said 20 years, I've actually been in the business now 35 years. There was 15 years before I started the Warped Tour in the music business. I was working over 300 shows a year in Los Angeles. So one that year I worked 320 shows a year. Every, you know, I was that guy that, you know, helped unload the gear in the van and set up the lights and throw people off stage and bring pizza to the dressing rooms. So I had kind of built this, you know, reputation in California. So I was running all the tours out here. I was running all the shows out here for companies like Golden Voice, who had a lot of free, but I always owned my own production company. And then in 1991, I was asked to go on the road with on a new tour. It was going to be the first traveling festival, and that was Lollapalooza. And I was a stage manager of Lollapalooza in 1991. I had never really been out on the road before, so it was really strange for someone that would worked on a local level to be invited on that. But I had taken care of the bands in L.A., and they respected my hard work. So they gave me that shot, and then I was kind of doing events where we would cross charity Board Aid, which was an AIDS awareness event where we would put skateboarding and boarding. We'd have a board across, and we'd have the Offspring or a bunch of bands play up in the mountains. And we were sitting in the snow one day, as Perry Farrell had just played with Born of Her Pyros, and it was this epic moment, board across, snow. He played an old Jane's Addiction song. And I was sitting there with my friend going, this whole lifestyle that we've grown up with in Southern California, skating and snowboarding and, you know, it's everything we're about in the punk rock scene, it's gonna grow because I just read about this thing, the X Games were being formed. And I said, let's go out and do this ourselves.
Wow.
It was probably going to be my last thing that I did in the music business because I thought maybe it was time to go get a real job. As you know, when you're in a world like this, your parents are always going, when are you going to get a real job? You know, where are you
exactly.
Gonna paycheck? And they didn't realize I was working 320 days a year and building something for the future. And I had that relationships, and that's what I tell young people. Sometimes it makes sense to be patient. That's one thing I think in entrepreneurship, a lot of times the patience factor, people don't want to be patients, you know, and you could have that success like a Zuckerberg or someone with Facebook, but most people, you still have to build up those relationships that allow you that moment to fail, because the first Warped Tour was an absolute failure financially. However, right. I had those people that would support me because I'd worked so hard for them who said, hey, Kevin's idea here, it's different. It's not something that's been done. Let's give them a second chance. And that second chance came. You know, that second chance came when bands that were more, you know, I'd worked with, but like Pennywise and NoFX and those bands kind of said, you know what, we hear it was a lot of fun. It was really cool. It was different, Kevin. We want to come with you. You've always done things different in L.A. Let's go with you next year. So it brought some artist credibility to the tour. And then you learned early on that these kind of events somewhat need subsidy, and that came originally from Vans, you know, the shoe company that my mom and used to drag us to the LA County Fair, the same fair that I was judging a battle bands at last night. And Vans was the shoe we all wore and grew up in. And I got a meeting with them, and it's that fine line between, you know, BS and whatever to get it done at first, and you're confident. And it was just like that moment where you had nothing left to lose in life, and you just went for it.
Right.
And they got behind me, and you know, 21 years later, we've been out on the tour, on the road with them, and we're a great part. You know, we have a partnership, which kind of led to this book. You know, we had put out an earlier book of early photos, and we were looking at the other day and seeing Blink 182 or Gwen Stefani or these people when they were kids out on the Warped Tour, and where they've gone with their careers. So we thought it was time to come back with a second book. And that second book was a collaboration with my friend Howie Abrams, who's written a bunch of other books, and Lisa Johnson, who is the only person to have photographed all 20 summers of Warped Tour. And
wow.
They took a collection of stories and photos, and that's what, you know, Warped Tour Misfit Summer Camp, because it got known as Punk Rock Summer Camp. That's what a lot of people, you know, Punk Rock Summer Camp. I try to teach it. I wanted to create getting business done but having fun doing it, and that's been always my motto. You have to have fun or it's not worth doing. And, you know, leads to we'll talk about the crossroads of where I'm at in my life, where you have to infuse that fun again back into it to keep your interest.
Yeah.
So,
gosh.
You know, we're stoked about the book, and there are a lot of photos in there. And, you know, they just interviewed, you know, it's one of those things over 20 years, a lot of people are going, why didn't I get interviewed? I didn't get interviewed. There's thousands of people that could have been interviewed, but this is, you know, through the eyes of about 30 or 40 people they interviewed for this book.
Yeah,
and
that must have been a feat. But I just love that you corrected me and said,
no.
You know, I love being corrected. It's okay.
That's all right.
15 years, that's awesome, you know, of you not necessarily automatically knowing from year one that you were going to start a work tour, but just being open and still working, never stopping. And then now you kind of continue that where people were holding on to 20 years of photos, you know, and I think this book is probably going to be one of those history-making books because just with just some wonderful, wonderful information, definitely.
Yeah, it's real fun.
And
it's a fun, yeah.
Yeah, and fun in your business. If you don't love it, I did a show with some kids over the weekend, and they were so wiped out. And I hadn't slept for like 2 days. And they're like, Ms. Prosper, how are you still going? I said, because this is what I love to do. I'm not tired. This is what I love to do. And you're so right on. if it wasn't fun to me, then it'd be a drag. You know, I'd be like, oh, we're here again.
And
so,
and eventually, you know, you don't chase the money at first. And that's what I think a lot of people make mistakes doing. You know, it's never – I have more responsibilities financially now than, you know, with two daughters and a wife and, you know, people employed, and I have to keep them doing that. But, you know, it was never about the money, you know, at first. It was just about, you know, doing something you love and working hard on it and then other people getting involved in it, which eventually allowed me to make a nice living at it, you know, but not taking – but never taking advantage of something to make money. Is an important part of it, you know, creating something or a reason. And I don't think people have a problem when people make money as long as they're not taking advantage of a scene. If I was, if I took advantage of punk rock, I would have never allowed to do this. And it's been really a fun ride, and, you know, we'll see where it's all going now.
Yeah, and I think that that's that fine line that people talk about when they're like, oh, well, you're selling out because you're doing this art for money. But I think that when you have this aspect, hey, this needs to be subsidized, so this is what we need to do, but look at the progress we're making. Look at the professionalism that comes with it. Look at the people that are succeeding and representing the art in such a dynamic way. You know, it helps us to grow.
And I think, you know, if you don't evolve, you eventually die. And, you know, some people, you know, I would say, hey, you've sold out punk rock or this and this. And a lot of the punk rock artists that I work with say, no, Kevin, you gave us a chance to go around the country, and you did this. You extended some of our careers by having this every summer for us. And then there's a time where you have to evolve. And I think with Warped, our audience is, you know, 14 to 19, 20, maybe some, you know, older. But, you know, that's a core people, and they're evolving. So we're delivering the same show to them that we delivered 20 years ago. The bands sing the same passionate way they do and connect with the kids on the same level. It's just that now that music is different than maybe what someone was listening to 20 years ago. And, you know, people say, then I usually ask them, and I go, well, how old are you now? And they'll go, well, why do you ask? And I go, you're probably over 30 because you don't quite connect with the bands that are singing to these kids now. And that's okay. But I can't put that same show out or I wouldn't be around.
Exactly, exactly. And that was something I took away from you when we met at the Driven Music Conference, that whole evolution. You were giving us some stories how you were staying at a hotel, but there was a tour going on. You were staying at a hotel, but you were staying at the outskirts, not like at the airport where the main people were. And when you went, you saw such a big disparity from years past. These big bands that we so admire, the Motley Crue, just whoever we can think of in terms of big rock bands, were not even staying at that main hotel. It was a reverse where they had the label actually staying at that major hotel, which it kind of just would put a bad taste in your mouth when you would think, oh my goodness, you see, are these bands that we love and they should be, you know, living lavishly with all this champagne flowing everywhere, where no, we have to be very, very conservative and ready to evolve. And I definitely took that message with me when you were discussing that.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's where we're at. You know, every year, you know, you finish the last summer, and, you know, I definitely need to make some changes over last summer, and you know, the evolution of the way we market, the way the internet works, the negativity that flows online towards almost anything when you're in a youth market. It's, you know, you could say this ball's black and have a picture of a black ball on, and people would attack it for calling it a black ball. You know, it's just,
right,
it's the way
right.
it is. So, you know, it's, and that's a bad, but it's just like, it's the neg. So now we're like trying, okay, you know what, how do we, you know, spin this back around, maybe, you know, to, you know, because it's all, a fraction of a percent of the people are creating this negative aura around the internet right now. So how do you overwhelm that, and how do you deal with that, or how do you highlight the positive? And so we're working on, you know, some technologies now, and people that, you know, things that we can do to get this back on track, so people are willing to speak online, have opinions, because you can't have any opinion without just being unintelligently attacked these days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a lot of really cool, you know, a lot of good stuff. you know, a lot of, you know, we've got these, I've got a couple one day. I thought everyone's forming these 3-day festivals. You notice all over the country, these 3-day festivals. And I go, you know what? There's a lot of people out there that can't, one, afford to go to a 3-day festival. They don't have time to go to a 3-day festival. And you know what? It's not, they want to go to a 1-day, very focused festival of music they love or something that was important to them. And we're resurrecting the Taste of Chaos, one of my other projects, and we're doing it as a 1-day festival next weekend. And then the following weekend, I want to show that punk rock. Punk rock was my music. That's my soul. That's my passion. I was so, last year was not, I wouldn't say my easiest year in the business, and I wasn't really having a lot of fun, so I said, I have to create the show. And my wife's like, can't we just go to Hawaii and have some fun? I go, no, I want to do the show and bring all my friends and build the old skate ramp. We're building a big tent of punk rock history. And then you make a word, and I said, it's not dead festival. And because punk rock's not dead. And we need to show that this community was vibrant in California and that some of those shows were just, you know, the memories of those shows is fading with our memories as we're getting older. So we've created this 1-day festival, and it's going to be, it's, and I didn't do it financially. It was just like, you know, well, if, you know, if we broke even, great. If I lose a little money, great. And it's probably going to turn into my biggest thing of the year because it's done, really got re-energized the excitement. And, I mean, we sold over 15,000 tickets for, you know, a bunch of bands. But I had to go to each band, Descendants, Bad Religion, NOFX, Pennywise, and say, when was the last time you guys all played together and hung out as a community? And it had been a long time. And they understood. So everyone took a little bit of a financial step backwards to be able to put this show together. And it's now caught, a, you know, you just feel those moments when you put something together at the right time and it's going to touch the right nerve in people. And we're so excited. Everyone's coming out to camp. Everyone's bringing motorhomes. It's going to be like a big reunion.
Nice.
You know, and it's really going to be a fun couple of weeks. I'm really excited about them. And then, you know, we have to jump over to London for a Warp show in October. And, you know, I'm sitting here. You know, all day long, bands and managers, and they were coming over to talk about next summer already.
Perfect. That's wonderful. Yep, and that's how it goes. That's how you're able to be the powerhouse that you are. So 20 years in one book, well, 35 years in one book, really. What do you want the audiences to walk away with after reading the book, especially those that may have still never been to a Warped Tour event?
Well, you know, we all tour. Touring, you know, we hear about the glamour of touring, but it's really just, it's a lot of hard work. A lot of eating at truck stops down the road, a lot of, you know, trying to keep your relationships together, kind of, you know, the music business is hard. And, it's funny, I was watching the Jersey Boys movie the other night. I was kind of just exhausted and I go, we're all kind of cliches of ourselves. We go out on the road, and then the road gets old, and our families, you're disconnected from your families. You're trying to make that all work. But you know what? The Warped Tour is that one time where everyone gets together, and they come out of it different people. They come out of it with lifelong friends. That's what the biggest thing I hear is, you know what, I did Warped Tour, and those are the friends I hang out with from 15. Those are the people I look forward to seeing. When they come through town, I want to go see them. So if you can create that environment where you create something outside of what you're doing at the exact moment that carries through, that's what I'm proud of. And, you know, it's when the Warped Tour bands come through that played last summer. You'll go to a show, and I don't go to as many shows as I used to sometimes, but if I get out to a show and I go backstage and it's a Warped Tour band, there's like 40, 50 people that met on that tour all hanging out. And that's what I like, you know, because you know, expanding your family, because, you know, it is hard to have relationships in this business, and it is hard to have a normal life. And that line can become very dysfunctional and really hard. But then all of a sudden, you kind of see, like, okay, you got this support group around you of people that will be there, you know, not only when you have that hit song or when you're at the top, but they'll be there to support you the rest of your life.
Yeah, and that's important, you know, having a group of like-minded extended, especially an extended family of like-minded individuals just pours you through. It stops you from giving up, and you need that because, we will have parents in the background telling us, oh, so when are you going to get a real job? Just because they don't get it, you know?
I always love that line from Shaggy's line, who's going to have your back when it's all done? You know, one of his songs, Shaggy had this line. And that's really what it comes to. Who's going to be there at the end of all this run? And, you know, I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, it's nice to see other people that, you know, you support. And that's what got me involved with Music Cares, because Music Cares is there for the musician that maybe is not having the best run. And we can, you know, support our, you know, these foundations and that come out and help people. They'll fix your tooth. They'll help you if your van breaks down. We want to keep everyone on the road. We want everyone to be able to chase the same passions we have in our lives. And, you know, I like to be able to do that, you know, and it was fun. Last night we were judging the Battle of the Bands, and I get all my friends to come out, you know, Bob from Fearless Ray. Everyone comes out, and we all hang out and watch these young bands, and we have such a great time because you can see that spark in those eyes of those kids that maybe, you know, that reinvigorates you watching young music. And that's what's always, when I open the doors of a show, people ask, what gets you going? I go, watching those kids coming in with that same big face of, you know, openness, of ready to experience something. They're lined up in the morning, and they're so excited, and it kind of brings your passion back to you. And when this world can suck your passion out sometimes.
Yes, it can. And it's interesting. Really quick, I just want the community of artists that are writers out there, I really want you to pay attention to some of the things that Kevin is saying in terms of, you know, trying to turn certain medias around, which is basically saying what I've told many of you, is that we need a lot of content, and we need constructive content, very good content, professional content. So those of you who are blog writers and the writers that I run into that want to do things professional, hey, where Kevin is confirming what I've been saying is that you have an opportunity to fill that massive need of content and writing there. And that's, I definitely think, would be one way to turn anything negative around, because we have these educated upcoming writers who are immersing themselves with actual factual information, dicing it up and bringing it to people in a way that they can consume it and truly understand what you're doing. So I just wanted to really come out and let those people know, those Van Warped Tour patrons, go ahead and use your power, you know, use your voice out there so we can always help each other out. So that was just my soapbox moment.
you can always jump on a soapbox. It's great because I think right now we're at a transition where we see the media, you know, I call it the the TMZ era that we're in of media, where it's not about the fact. It's not slowing down. It's like, how quickly can we throw something out? Everyone's trying to get a jump on someone else without fact-checking or researching anything. So a lot of the young journalists I've met on the road this summer, I'm like, you know, you're going to be that era that's going to have to recapture the fact. And I think I just heard you say fact, you know, factual information, you know, and that's what, in a lot of it this summer, you know, it's got, everything's got to slow down. Everyone keeps technology faster, but brains are not processing things faster. It's overwhelming them. And things that stick, a lot of misinformation can stick on people very quickly because it just, that's the one thing they remember, because we're in that TMZ generation of just like, how quickly can we throw something out there? And even legitimate people who are supposed to be legitimate media are guilty of the same things right now. They'll throw it out there and then they try to retract it or let it dry down or go away, but it's still out there.
Exactly. And we've already taken it in. One thing I noticed after meeting you at the Driven conference, it sounded as if you personally were heading into a direction of reinventing yourself. Is that accurate, or could you kind of talk about what direction you're going?
Yeah, you know, I have been. You know, it was interesting. A couple of years ago, I got into the craft beer business. A bunch of surfers, going back to like what we did when we did the Warped Tour, where we got surfers and skaters and musicians together and created a business or a brand, or some of the early companies that I was helped out a bit with, Hurley and Volcom and some of those surfwear companies. So we created a craft brewery that was really like a unique vision of a guy named Josh Landon, brought me his ideas, and I became a partner of the company. And it was all about creating the best beer possible. We hired the best brewers. I didn't want to make beer, but I wanted to give someone an opportunity to make the best beer. So we gave them their opportunity to make the best beer. And we started working on the branding, the look, the image of the company. And it grew so fast that we've ended up, you know, we're backed into a corner almost in the sense of, you know, we couldn't raise more capital. The way we financed it was unique. So if we raised more capital, everyone would have been diluted. And we had a large buyout offer a few weeks ago. But it wasn't a buyout in the traditional sense. Everyone keeps their jobs. Everyone runs the business the same. This just gives us access to grow into a national company. I'm working with a company now, Bamboo Toothbrushes, because I do think people want to try to save this planet, but it's small little things each day that just add up to the plastic messes in the ocean, the plastic messes in our, you know, in our landfills, just the plastic mess of society. If you think about just, I was really, you know, you just look how much plastic we go through or we come in contact with. And that plastic's only been around on a mass way 30 or 40 years, you know.
Right.
And, you know, so we formed a girl with a bright idea. She was great right out of college. She's working really hard on this idea, but she came to us. A couple other people were involved. Brett Gurowitz from Epitaph Records, Mike Kaminsky, who's a manager of artists like 303 and different bands like that. And we were working with her on a company called Plus Ultra, which is a bamboo toothbrush, a sustainable brand toothbrush. Only thing is nylon bristles you can't replace right now, but it's 92% sustainable, you know, made out of sustainable bamboo. And so I'm looking at brands like that, that maybe, you know, we don't realize that we throw away, you know, 192 million toothbrushes, you know, in California alone a year, and the plastic just goes in the, because it's just a piece of plastic, you throw it in the trash. So
right.
I think, you know, simple everyday things in your life, that so I'm looking at that direction, is how do I take some of my environmental things that I used to do or still do with my tour and maybe put it into business models. And so I'm excited about that. So I'm looking at a lot of different brands and different things to get involved in. You know, I'm doing these one-off festivals, doing our teaching. We started the Entertainment Institute, which is a online as well in-person course where artists that are touring can give lessons to people on the road. So that's the breakfast I was at this morning.
Nice.
I was talking about how to expand that. It's called the thinktei.com. It's an online courses and things. We were, you know, down there at Driven doing some of those classes when I was there. So, you know, you're always looking to kind of keep your brain moving and just got to keep looking at the world. I always say, yeah, look at it, you know, a different way. I just kind of look at everything in a little different way. And I think that's what, you know, young entrepreneurs do. They look at everything and say, how do we make this change? How do we change what is existing? And that's what I've learned through the tech. That's how they look at how do we disrupt. Disruption is important at times. And
that does work when you see it that way. As a matter of fact, we were talking about the Entertainment Institute. I had Keegan Pitts on the show, and we were and the Entertainment Institute came up. So we've been putting out the website so people can go check it out and learn a little bit more about the Entertainment Institute. So that's been really cool. It's very refreshing as well. You're very receptive to the environment, I've noticed. Just not just literally as an environmentalist, but I really appreciate how candid you are and the advice that you give, and you're just open to the world, which is awesome. Now, would you say that reinventing yourself is necessary or deadly in this form of industry? Or better yet, is there a specific time in your career when changes actually should be made?
Well, I think, you know, your gut's going to tell you. There was an artist I used to travel with, became friends with a guy named Ice-T. Ice-T came on one of my tours, and I met him on Lollapalooza in 1991. And one day we were sitting up on the bus late, and he goes, Lyman, you got to go with your gut, man. You overthink stuff too much. And you get that feeling in your gut, and you just have to start going with it. Okay, this is going to come back and haunt me if I don't fix this right now. This is your gut tells you that, and it's not. It becomes a natural process to go with your instinct. Of course, you want some, you know, my instinct a lot of time is still to walk around the lines at the shows and see what T-shirts kids are wearing of bands that I might want to work with. I don't recognize them yet, you know. You could back that up with all the online research you want and all those kind of things. But, you know, and then you have to learn how to be willing to fail. Well, failure is okay. I have failed many times in my life. I like to talk about my successes. I think all of us like to talk about our successes. But I failed quite a few times. And you, instead of stressing out over the failure, take notes, learn from it, and move on. Just move on as quickly as possible. We had a very very rough experience with a haunted house a few years ago. We thought this could not miss. It was Rob Zombie, myself, my partner John Reed. There's all these people, the best haunted house builder in the world, supposedly. And we built this haunted house, and we thought it was going to be great, and all the, you know, and it just was an absolute failure. And
oh, wow.
You also have to know when to just move on. You know, some of these, you know, inherent gamblers are promoters sometimes and things like that, where they're like, double down, we can do this, we'll make the money next year, we'll do this. And I go, it's not about the money to me. It was about the poor experience personally I had doing this. It was not fulfilling
right.
to me. So luckily I've gotten to the position where I can write off the money, the loss, which was the
right,
largest
right.
loss, and just move on. I didn't feel the need to have to double down because I realized it's not what I want to be spending my Octobers doing. And,
right.
And if I kept pushing, you know, and then, yeah, I think that's the problem sometimes. People just don't know when to move on.
Yeah, and that's that pride. So that's some good stuff. That's that pride in your ego. Like, no, I can do this. I can make it happen. And part of your ego is letting it just go to sleep. Like, okay, just calm down.
Exactly, you know. And in this business, you know, there you're going to have it's managing your own level of ego is important. Some people don't, you know, we're watching a presidential candidate that's probably the largest ego I've ever seen of anyone, you know, and it seems to work for him.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm like, I can't believe people are being, that's the TMZ society being sucked
yeah.
into his wake at the moment, because any reasonable person, I feel, would sit down and really lay it all out, just go, whoa, that's not probably going to be the greatest thing if it came to fruition.
Right. And you helped me with my segue because you have articles that you've been writing for AP. You have some great opinions. You're very taking in a lot of information, so you have a lot of opinions. And being a journalist, I love that you're writing for the AP and other media. How can we stay connected with that?
Well, you know, I just felt the urge. It was some things that I believed. There was a lot of misinformation being thrown around. I felt there was a lot of misinformation being thrown around. Others thought, no, this is, you know. And I thought, you know, okay, I need to start putting this down, and which is going to lead me to another book. I think I just have to find the time to start. I've outlined it. I think it's almost time.
That's the first step.
I've outlined the chapters. I know what I want to do. You know, I may have to bring a ghostwriter with me next summer out on the road, someone that can help me really put this and spend that time putting this all down. I just got to find a minute. I want to do it, and it's impressive. But I think the starting point was me to start writing articles like this and start putting things out, just getting that flow of writing again. And now I need to get back in that
that's
flow.
That's a good start.
Yeah, it's a good start.
Yeah,
it
is a flow. It is a flow.
Yeah,
I would have to agree. So, well, I'll throw my hat in the pot for the ghostwriting position next year.
Ready to go out.
So we'll talk on that later.
And being an entrepreneur, it's an opportunity.
Yeah, what do you say? Yes.
If you're an entrepreneur, you got to take that opportunity just to throw those things
exactly.
out there. Yeah.
Exactly. You got to open your mouth. It doesn't just happen. It doesn't just happen. So thank you so much, Kevin, for being on the show with us. We appreciate your time and the effort that you've made, your knowledge. I love how much of a visionary you are. I think you can teach a whole class on just that, just, you know, keeping your visions alive and you know, going into them with speed. I can even tell that even with this talking about, you know, the book, again, your outline, you're like, okay, you know what, I need to make time, because you just seem like that kind of person that you're like, okay, I'm talking about it again, I got to make it happen, and you'll squeeze in the time. So I appreciate that, because there's not too many people that can do that. So you know what, I actually had a question about that. Who would you credit your work ethic to?
I don't know. I think, you know, it was one of those things, you know, I was adopted. I was an adopted child by an awesome family. And I just saw, you know, but I saw my father go to work every day. And he would get up every, and he would just go to, and he did, you know, he worked for 35 years for the same company. And it was, we worked very hard to, and then you really look back at that and go, you know, we didn't really have a lot of money when it really comes down to it. But he was very smart with it. And he was able to provide for four adopted children that he took in and my mother took in. And, you know, it's, and I don't know, and I don't know if there's some historical thing. You don't know if it was a heredity thing because I never met my birth parents. I don't know where that was. You know, my wife jokes about it that, you know, you must have had a very, very high-powered mother back in the early 60s that it wasn't great to have this child at this point. She knew giving him up was the right thing because she was leading business somewhere or breaking down barriers somewhere for women in business. I don't know. You know, I've been tempted to look into that, but I haven't. And, you know, it's what I feel naturally doing. My wife goes, you only feel natural working. You're like a shark. You have to keep moving. You just have to keep moving around the tank or you're going to die.
And, oh, wow.
You know, and she's just, that's, you know, she says, well, and she's accepted that. It was tough. She thought I was going to be able, but she's like, you know what? This is who you are. You know, you're going to go out and do the battle of bands till 11 o'clock. You're not going to sleep in this morning. You're going to be out of breakfast by 7:45. And we're going to go to a charity event tonight at the Skirball Museum for Greg Allman. And one of my mentors, Bill Graham was one of my mentors that I really looked up to. I never really got to spend a lot of time with him, but I watched him from afar. And there's an exhibit for him, so I'm looking forward to this evening. But I am looking forward to Saturday morning this year. I don't have anything this Saturday. 1 week from now, we'll have all those festivals, and right through to Thanksgiving, it looks like everything's pretty booked up. Getting a chance to go to Tel Aviv and do some teaching for a few days this in November, and you know, there's a lot out there I still want to do.
Yeah, awesome. Well, you're a man after my own heart because my family says the same thing about me. Can't help it. And quite possibly, I don't know when you'll be in Tel Aviv. I should be there in November as well, so I will definitely find out what you're doing.
The 12th through the 16th. Let me know if you're there.
I will. So we appreciate your time and your knowledge. We wish you continued success. I can't wait to have my copy of the book and check it out. And I just thank you so much for everything. And just keep up the good work and what you're doing for us. We appreciate and we'll keep following you.
All the best. Thank you very much, Mon.
No problem, no problem. All right, guys, that is our show for today. We so appreciate you for coming on and listening to Mr. Kevin Lyman, and there's just so much more. Please follow him on the social medias, Kevin Warp, and of course, on Forfini, and all of the different mediums that he has. We will post them on our website and on our Twitter page where we always put everything under Regal Poet. So definitely this is one of those episodes you should archive and keep replaying so you can know how to build your own empire such as Kevin. He's always been a great influence. So you guys have a good rest of the day, lunch for the people that are in the eastern part of the town, and everyone else. Have a good rest of the day, and we'll talk to you soon. And always remember to be yourself, be regal. Have a good one.